What is the meaning to your life? Why are you here on earth? Do you know your purpose? We're going to talk about that and more on the show today, Accentuating the Positive with Karen Swain with Amrit Sandhu. Stay tuned.
You got to accentuate the positive. Wow, I feel good. A little bit of feel good goes a long way.
You're listening to Karen Swain, teacher of deliberate creation, accentuating the positive, showing you a way to a better life.
Accentuating the positive, it's not just fad, it's sanity. Who in their right mind would accentuate anything else?
Clap along if you feel like that's what you want to do.
G'day, g'day. Karen here on Accentuate the Positive Media with on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Public Radio Paranormal Radio Network on 107.7 and 105.3 FM. So great to be with you all today. We've got the Aussies online today with Amrit Sandhu. If you were Indian, it would be Amrit Sandhu, but with an Aussie accent, it would be Amrit Sandhu.
Namaste and g'day all in one.
Namaste, g'day, g'day and namaste. I'm very patriotic. I've got Australia behind me in the background there on my green screen.
I love it. I love it.
So great to have you on the show. So I hope I wasn't muted when I did that little bit at the beginning. Was I muted? No.
No, we heard you. Yeah, thank you so much for having
me. I went off screen and then I saw, oh, I'm on mute. Anyway, live television, live video. Don't you like it? Live video. You can't edit out any of your mistakes. I see we've got some comments already, people tuning in. Hi, Shirley. Hi, Alison. Great to have you. Good morning. Good morning. I know it's evening over there in Canada and the US. So, yeah, finding purpose, and we're going to go around the world today with all sorts of things talking about finding purpose and depression and being inspired and evolving the world, inspired evolution. I think we're all here to inspire each other, inspire the world, with Amrit. And let me tell you a little bit about Amrit. Growing up in an Indian family in Australia, Amrit Sandhu had access to many spiritual beliefs, metaphysical concepts, gods and deities from his Indian culture, as well as from his father, who was his spiritual teacher. But he found merging these beliefs with a modern Western lifestyle here in Australia difficult. This eventuated when he was younger, much younger, in years of depression and feeling like he didn't know his purpose. He had no purpose to his life. Amrit struggled with depression for around 6 years, then started to explore mindfulness and meditation, which completely turned his life around. His second dark night of the soul was when he was struggling to know why he was here on earth and what he was to do with his life. He was in a job in the corporate world that didn't fulfill his soul. It's a story that I hear a lot from many people. You might have been earning money and, you know, having a good time, but feeling like this isn't what I'm here to do. It was actually part of my story too. And his search for more meaning birthed Inspired Evolution 7 years ago, a podcast show which focuses on spirituality, consciousness, and finding purpose. Today, Amrit is an international speaker, mindfulness life purpose coach, podcast host, and founder of the Inspired Evolution. He is also a Mind Valley certified trainer for Australia and India. So you're doing stuff in India, Amrit.
Yeah.
Cool. That's very cool.
Helpful to have multiple languages under your belt. That's good. Yeah.
Very cool. And you can find Amrit and Inspired Evolution on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Apple Podcasts. He's got a couple of websites. He's got his coaching website, which is amrit.coach. I didn't know you could get .coach. That's cool.
Yeah, and Inspired
Yeah, that's cool. Because you know, my daughter's like, what will I call my website? Anyway, we've been thinking about that. And I'm like, there's so many dots these days. There's .love. I didn't know you could get .coach and inspiredevolution.com. And remember, you can also find Accentuate the Positive on all those places too and many others. Twitter. I'm actually loving Twitter since Elon Musk took over the platform. Free speech has been returned to some platforms, which is pretty cool. And also the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network is also on Twitter. We're actually live streaming on Twitter through the UFO Paranormal Network as well. Amrit, the story. So we had a chat recently. We were talking about growing up in an Indian culture in Australia. And Australia, of course, has many sort of Asian cultures here because we're so close to Asia. And, you said it was difficult, but you were born here, right?
Yeah, I was born in Australia in a small city called Adelaide.
You were born in Adelaide. Yeah. My mother was born in Adelaide.
Yeah, it's a nice place to grow up. It's a nice place to retire. But I think in the middle parts of your life where you just want to go experience the, like, what the big wide world has to offer, it falls a little bit short. But, you know, and that's not to say the people that are in Adelaide aren't enjoying themselves there. I felt more compelled to move to a bigger city. And then also having gone through so many challenges in such a small environment, we can discuss more about why it was so important to move. But, yeah, originally from Adelaide here in Australia. Mm.
So today Amrit is in Melbourne. I think Americans say Melbourne. I've got a friend who has another podcast show called Expanding Reality who's in Melbourne at the moment. He's actually facilitating a wedding down there, but he's not coming up to Sydney, and I'm in Sydney. So we're miles away from each other. For those who are listening on the other side of the world, we're like miles away from each other. So Amrit's got, it's colder down there. He's down under, even more down under than I am. Let's get into your story. So what was going on with growing up in, were your family very traditional with their Indian culture, and or would integrate into the sort of Aussie way?
So yeah, I think they were quite well integrated in that regards. But then even integration is a very interesting concept to some degree, because when you talk about well integrated, they'd been in the country for about 5 to 6 years before they had their son, which was me. Mm-hmm. And so by all means, by their lens, and I look back at them, they were very progressive. But then you look at the just rich tapestry of tradition that has been handed down to them. And this is where epigenetics becomes really interesting, right? Because it's just the lineage that they'd been carrying, you know, has been such a deep, rich lineage of the Indian culture, that 5 to 6 years of living in Australia doesn't all of a sudden, you know, turn you into a neoliberal, however you want to put it, right? It doesn't just wipe all that away, regardless of how progressive you are. And they were progressive to the degree that they left India to move to a Western culture for greater opportunities. I would say by their standards, they were very progressive. But tradition was also something that was really, really strong baked into their beings. And I would say I kind of really, maybe I'm biased towards it, but I kind of really dug the sort of the balance between those two. Because I think at any given time, like, I've seen some posts, some memes online, which are hilarious, which is like, tradition is just peer pressure from dead people, which I think is pretty funny. But I do think there is some value true to tradition. I think lots of people have carved out, like, how we got here, I think, is important to recognize your ancestry. But then also the times are changing as well, and so it's important to be inspired to evolve. But then also honoring the shoulders on the giants on which you stand. So, yeah, all that to say, I think they were progressive by their own measure. But looking from the outside in, from a neutral ground, there were a lot of traditional values that they carried, absolutely. Mm.
Sorry, I'm sharing everything. I'm sharing on Twitter and everything. So I am listening to you. Yeah, there is a lot. There is a lot to take from the Indian tradition. Look, years ago, I went out with an Indian boy when I was in my 30s. His name was Krishna. Of course it was Krishna.
Of course it was Krishna.
The name of God.
Was he blue?
He was blue. He was from another planet. But he grew up in India, and he moved to Australia later in life. But he grew up with all that Indian tradition and Hindu tradition and stuff. But it was a bit like Deepak Chopra's story. He didn't see it as worthy. He wanted to, like, be in the sciences, be in the corporate world, climb the corporate ladder, get a, you know, job in a Western culture, and he sort of really revered all that. And so he was working in the corporate world. He had a, it was hilarious. He had a company car, but he'd never learnt to drive. So the car sat in the garage. And I used to drive his company car. But he was so psychic. He was so unbelievably psychic. Like, it was the first person I'd ever dated that was really psychic. And that was really exciting to me. I found that really exciting. But he put no cred in that. Like, doesn't matter. Like, he could tune into people and it's like, I'd say, tell me about that person. It was like he'd known them all his life. But that came from his culture, his grandmother, his Indian grandmother. Did any of that sort of happen to you, like with your Indian culture? But I guess you grew up in Australia where, again, psychic ability was not nurtured enough as children or in our education system or even talking about consciousness, right?
Yeah, so religion was fostered very deeply within me. And the lens on religion, it was very interesting, actually, my upbringing, because I grew up going to Christian schools. My father is a Sikh and my mother was a Hindu. And so there was a lot of this, a lot of different thought models and perspectives flying around in terms of, and I don't want to say a lot of different faiths, I should say, sorry, thought models is a bit sacrilegious, but a lot of different faiths melting into one little melting pot. So there was a lot of religion, and growing up in an Indian family, it's, the conversation around karma and, you know, the fact that, you know, this is not our first life, you know, these sort of things are, they're baked into, they're not even part of the dinner table conversation. It's like, it's just what you're talking about all the time. It just comes up in conversation. Why did such and such, like, what is such and such going on? I was like, oh, it must have been, you know, something he did in his last life. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, you know. And then you're like, oh, last life's like, it's just everyday vernacular in conversation. So religion was a big part of my upbringing. And the blessing being that having been exposed to so many different faiths, recognizing that there's so many different roads that lead to Rome, and that not one is better than the other. They're all different, but everybody has their own path. But, you know, this journey to wholeness, to oneness is available to all of us. But it's interesting where we are right now. There's been some research and they find people are leaving religion now more than ever. And potentially because of, you know, what you were highlighting before, this sort of allure of the sciences, and that sort of left brain logic being more available now. And then we can, you know, I'm not sure if that is coupled with us being in Kali Yuga and maybe the, you know, us being in that sort of darker period. It's, you know, maybe that is what is darkening, that sort of right brain, faith brain sort of aspect of us. But yeah, all of that to say, I think we are, people are leaving religion, but they are coming to spirituality though, touch wood. And that's really interesting to sort of perceive that people are trying to forge their own path, which in some ways is really empowering. I find myself in this sort of poly-faith path, which is, and I know there's a word for it, it's escaping me right now, but like, you know, believing in many different things. At the anchor of it, I'm a Sikh. But again, I don't dress like a Sikh. And you come to my house and most of the stuff here is Buddhist. So it's a really interesting time to be alive, I feel, where we can, build on so much that has gone before us. Just learn and access things from different points, different angles, depending on where our life is as well. And I think most of those people that are tuning into your podcast and us here today on the radio, probably carry a level of self-awareness that is, I don't want to say higher, like there's levels, but probably higher than the average individual. And I think that sort of also bleeds into why people become less religious, more spiritual, because, you know, they'll, in a certain phase of their life, like I podcasted somebody recently, Julie Poole, an amazing, amazing channel. And she, you know, for a certain part of her life, her entire spirituality and her spirit guides and everybody that she was channeling were like Native American. And then she went through a phase where it was very Buddhist. And then she went through a phase where everybody she was channeling, and just where she is now, is like very angelic and very Christ consciousness oriented. So she's even been through those phases. And I look at that almost as like a telltale sign that, you know, we are all inspired and evolving in our own ways. And that's not to say that, you know, Native American spirituality is more rudimentary than Christ consciousness. I'm sure for other people it's the other way around. Depending on where they're at and what lessons they're here to learn, they'd be accessing certain guides on their path and journey, and other people, like shooting into other things down the line. So all of that to say, grew up very, very baked into theism, if you want to call it that way, and learned a lot, I guess, about religion, spirituality, and the sort of the differences between the two, and just, yeah, very open to spiritual insight, spiritual wisdom, the idea that, you know, this is a concept of Maya, that this is an illusion, and that we're here to learn, a couple of few sacred things in our very short time here before we return to where we came from, was quite a profound awareness to have from such an early age, I believe, touch wood. For other people, it's that everybody's on their own path. So that was what was unique about my upbringing, I guess.
Look, in Sydney, I don't know about in Melbourne, but the kirtan community is really big here, and I've got a lot of friends that play kirtan and really into the, they bring that wisdom from the Indian traditions here. And Sydney also has a very large Jewish population, and so many of them call themselves Hindus. I think that's really cute. But in all of it, there's still that they're in the sort of conscious community, spiritual community, but they're taking the wisdom from that tradition into the consciousness community, talking about, you know, what we talk about on the show, on our shows, right? And what was the question I wanted to take? But marrying your tradition with Western society, you said in the bio that it created depression. Where did the depression come from, and how did you get over it?
Yeah, so it was interesting, right? Because I was an adolescent, young male, 22, 23, and I landed in a psychologist's chair. So I'm sitting opposite a psychologist, touch wood, and she's basically we had a long chat, and she's gone, "Oh, it's pretty evident that you've been struggling at this point with clinical depression." And it's like, I'm clinical major depression. I was like, okay, well, I'm here. Where to from now? And she goes, "Look, you're actually going to be okay in a couple of months." And that was also very interesting, because on one hand, she just said, "You've been struggling with depression for 6 years." And then on the other hand, she said, "In a couple of months, you'd be okay." And the reason I remark upon that is because I think in mental health, it speaks to like how things can turn and change. But also for most people that are exposed to mental health, they sort of take certain things for granted. But when you zoom out, like before that point, I'd only ever had physical injuries, right? And when you snap a shin, right, you snap it in like a second. Yeah, or you're doing an activity for like 10, 15 minutes or an hour and you snapped your shin. But then the recovery time is like 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, right? So it's this drawn out process of healing from like a physical ailment. But the recovery time on the mental ailment was kind of flipped around, and that really didn't, I couldn't make sense of that. And so in the moment it was kind of almost like she had discounted all the challenge that I'd been through. Which is interesting that I was looking at it that way. But nonetheless, she said, "You were going to be okay in a couple of months." And I said, "How can you be so sure?" And she said, "Look, firstly, you know something's wrong," which, you know, now having been a coach for the last 7 years, this is incredible wisdom. "You know something's wrong. And the second thing is you want to do something about it. Like, you're here, right? You're willing." So aware and willing. And at the time, those are things I just glossed over. But in that moment, they were really important. Touch where I look back and go, "Oh my God, those were such important things." And that's how she could diagnose that actually you're going to be okay in a few months, because of the awareness, because of the willingness. And I wasn't willing out of choice, let's be clear. Like, I was willing because, yeah, my whole world around me had just crumbled. My social dynamics, my relationships, my partner, like my relationship with my parents, like everything. Touchwood, had fallen apart. And so that to say, She then, in that session, said, look, the key thing you need from your entire story is to install the value of honesty. And I remember that was a moment where, like, the sort of ground fell out from underneath me. She had pulled on this thread on the carpet, which just would just not end. And, yeah, it was this really, really trippy, fascinating, deep, profound, life-changing moment for me where someone had just said, you can install honesty. And I was like, yes, that's absolutely what's been wrong. I haven't been able to be honest with myself, honest with others, honest about just about everything. And the key thing in there was the fact that she was allowing me to give me the permission, which now, you know, through Carol Dweck's work and stuff like that, she was discussing growth mindset without even, she was like implying it, that you can actually change. Because up until that point, I thought I was fixed, and that, you know, I can potentially change who I am by adopting a value, a certain value of honesty. So to answer your question, therein lies a bit of a rub. And so I grew up with a certain set of values, which now I can articulate this so clearly, but back then it was just a sea of internal mess. So I grew up with a certain set of values, which when you look at the Indian culture, there's so much richness in there. It's so incredible. And again, the Western culture, also incredibly rich in its own right. And, you know, there's so much that it's given the world. And in fact, the world is largely stepping into that in such deep ways. So when you look at the two, though, there is quite the contrast. Yeah. And one of the things that in India, because you've got so much competition, so much of a population, there's pollution, there's corruption, there's it's really hard to get ahead. Even you look at the education system, like people that are like, I remember I went and lived in India for 6 months as a kid, and I remember going to school and it was just insane. Like in Australia, being Indian, touchwood, I was always kind of academic. But when I got to India, I was average by all means. It was everybody else was like super, super onto it. And all they did was study. And it was like, why is some of these kids, all they do is study, they don't play, they don't do this, they don't do that. And it's like, because that's how what it takes to get ahead here. There is so much competition because of the nature of the population. Like you've got, I think it's 1.8 billion people living in the country now. Like the twice the population of Australia, I think, lives in New Delhi, like one city. Like that's, you know, you think about how vast Australia is, right? It's kind of crazy. And New Delhi is one little city. So all of that to say, people there, when you go to interface with them, I'll take my cousin as an example. So he drives a BMW 7 Series. Yeah, it's a beautiful car. But he lives in a smaller apartment. Yeah, and I've sat there and gone, how come like your house doesn't match your car? You know, like you've got an amazing car, but you've almost spent more on the car than you have on the house. Like it's disproportionate. But then you have a look around and this is commonplace, right? And it's not everywhere, but it's happening. And the reason it's happening is because there's an incentive to putting your best foot forward in any given moment. So if when he goes out for a meeting, he interacts with somebody, they're like, oh, this is somebody. It's not dissimilar to in Australia what you've got with real estate agents, right? They rent really nice cars because the nice car coupled with the nice house as they're showing the house gives the house extra value. Like there's this whole thing that it plays on people's psychology. And so that to sort of say there is this theme, and it's not governing the Indian culture, but there is a theme within the Indian culture of putting your best foot forward. Yeah, it's a polite way of saying fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah.
Then you have a look. Go on.
Well, I think that's rife throughout the world. Like we're putting our values in material things instead of in ourselves. Like I was talking about the guy that I dated, he put all his value in how much money he made, even having the corporate car, like instead of saying to his company, no, I don't need it, I don't drive. He's like, that status of having a car, that was so much more valuable to him than his own amazing healing and psychic abilities that he had innately and in him, but he gave no importance to. And
credo too.
I think that's everywhere. But in Asian cultures, because Asia's the same, like really big populations, yeah, they're I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's that growth and struggle. And so they, you know, and also media plays a big part in a role in, you know, in Huge. Influencing people's decisions and what they kind of desire, which is a really fundamental part of a human being, which can also be quite readily corrupted.
That's why I started this show. I mean, yeah. I know you started your show and more search for meaning, and I started thinking that I had a little bit of knowledge. Little did I know that until I started this show, I knew nothing. No, really. So I've been doing it for so long. I've spoken to so many people. I've learned so many things, as I'm sure you have with your show.
Mm.
But, just because of the influence media has on our psyche, and I just thought, oh, God, there has to be some conversations out there that changes the game, you know. And now there is.
Accentuate like, the positive.
Accentuate the positive. But look at where we are in 2024. There are so many podcast shows out there getting millions and billions of views having these types of conversations. And, yeah, it's so cool. But anyway, please go on, Dane.
And then you put it in contrast to the Australian culture or, you know, even the Western culture, which, you know, where there's that concept of mateship, you know, especially in Australia, everybody came over on a boat. You can sort of see through the rags straight into each other. So one of the values we've got here is I don't care if you've made it, I don't care if you haven't made it, just be transparent with me to the most part, you know. Transparency is one of these Aussie battler sort of values. Not to say that everybody's got it, but it's one of the themes again that runs in the current of Australian culture. Australian being very interesting actually, because it's only 200 years young, this Western Australia that we're talking about. Yeah. But then you've got the Indigenous, which are carrying this real bedrock of culture here. So that to sort of say the Western Australian culture, not Western Australia, but Western Australian culture, the Indian culture, you've got that transparency from mateship versus, hey, I'm just trying to put my best foot forward because, you know, the world is a really, there's this clamber kind of energy to try and get ahead because it's so competitive. And then you couple that with the Australian tall poppy syndrome and the, you know, so then you've got this counterbalance between like, I'm trying to put my best foot forward and people don't want my best foot. They just want to know where things are wrong and what's going on. But I'm not able to communicate that because I've only ever learned to put my best foot forward. And therein starts to lie this real little rub. And it seems little, but over time, if that's your entire being, you're it's like a fish swimming in like the wrong, like it's a fish out of water because you're in oxygen, but then you are a fish, you're meant to be in water. So right. So there's this real rub that happens. And it starts off with really small insidious things. Like for me, I was at school waiting to get picked up. My mum was always 5 minutes away. Yeah, didn't matter if she was half an hour away, didn't matter if she was an hour away. She was always 5 minutes away. You translate that into when I grew up, my friends would be like, hey, how far away are you coming to dinner? And I was like, dinner, let's just say is planned for 6. And I'd be like, yep, I'm 5 minutes away. 6:15, they'd call me, where are you? Oh, 5 minutes away. And then 6:30, where are you? 5 minutes away. And then 6:45, where are you? 5 minutes away. 7 o'clock, I'd rock up. Everyone's been waiting because they thought I was 5 minutes away. And they'd be pretty pissed off, which is fair enough, right? Like they'd be like, hey, we could have eaten and now food's cold and we were waiting for you. And then now we're sort of in this situation where we want to eat, but like now you're here and we're not super pleased to see you because you made us wait for an hour and everything's cold. Why didn't you just tell us you were going to be an hour late? And that lesson didn't really sink in. It was just like, oh, sorry, guys. Like, you know, I thought I was going to be fine. And it was like, again, you know, trying to put your best foot forward. When they picked me up on the phone, I was putting my best foot forward. Little did I know when I would arrive in the situation. And that's one small thing, right? And then you look at like you building your entire life like that in terms of, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go try and this in the world. I'm going to, you know, do this job and all that sort of stuff, building your life on such shaky foundations in a world where, you know, and I think there's also something to be said, like in a country where that theme is present, everybody understands that that's the operating system and they give each other allowances for that as well, right? So when you go to like people expecting to put their best foot forward, it's like, oh, that's, I'm not sure if that's 100% true, but sure, I can take it. I'm not going to take it at face value. You know, there's that awareness. Whereas in a culture where there's that mateship, it's like people do take things at face value. And then it's like, you know, it's like you are going to be here in 5 minutes and then you're not. Then you're like, that's kind of let me down and led this sour tone. So
yeah,
that's integrity.
I actually found that I've got a really big issue with integrity, kind of something I need to get over. I just got to get over it. But in India, that was like, we used to ask directions and people would point us in because they had no idea, but they didn't want to say they had no idea.
Yeah.
They just said, I know.
They're putting their best foot forward in the moment.
Yeah, like, and that drove me crazy in India. I found that really
because the ways are not like mapped out very well either. Now they are with Google Maps, but like back then they weren't as much, right? And so they're like, oh yeah, turn right there, turn left there, and then you go down the path and it's like not treacherous but like inconvenient to get down there. It's not like a paved asphalt road. And then you get there and you're like, there's nothing here. And then like, oh, this guy gave me a bum steer. You ask the next guy, he's like sending in the other direction. You just keep doing that. Yeah.
Can I tell you a funny story?
Please.
We arrived in India at 4 o'clock in the morning and the people that were going to pick us up didn't pick us up at 2 o'clock in the morning. By 4 o'clock in the morning, so somebody had given me a contact with an English guy that lived there and we called him and he sent his driver, or no, actually, he said, catch a taxi to my place. He said to me on the phone, first thing, he said, they're going to tell you they know the way, but they don't know the way. So you've got to find an honest taxi driver that's going to know the way. So we vetted a few drivers. They knew the way. I thought I picked one, but he didn't know the way. He ended up driving down a highway, like a big four-lane highway in Delhi. It's still dark. It's misty. He was going against the traffic. And I remember sitting in the back of the car, the taxi, with my husband at the time laughing, saying, just as well I know when I'm going to die, because otherwise I'd be really scared. And he stopped and asked directions from all the people. And they were telling him to, anyway, this taxi driver was completely lost. And then he stopped and he asked a woman, and this woman gave him the right directions. And then I said to my husband, ha, trust a woman to give him the right directions. Anyway, there's a question here from Christopher. I don't really know what you mean, Christopher. How do we know what is accurate and what is false about finding purpose, I suppose, or about values? Maybe you're talking about your values.
Yeah. And so
what do you want to say to Christopher?
That sounds like a question around alignment. And so really quickly, as I've been articulating it, there was a discrepancy in values. And so how to discover your true values, I've got a quick little exercise on my site, amrit.coach/values. It takes you 20 minutes to do. And in there, there's a bit of a mini masterclass in there, which can help you discover your values. But I'll share the exercise with you here. It's very intuitive. It's very straightforward. There's a list there of 500 values. And you literally just base it on impulse. Like you get like 3 minutes to do the whole thing, right? And 3 minutes to look at 500 words is a very short amount of time. So it's a bit Jesus take the wheel, which is intentional, right? So you allow your intuition to sort of flow. It's like intuitive journaling, intuitive writing. You just sort of pour yourself out. The key thing to do is basically go through the list and highlight anything that drives an impulse within you, any word that stands out. And one of the other hacks is if you see it in other people, it's within you as well, right? So some people will see Karen and some people will see openness. Other people see Karen, other people see beauty. Other people see Karen, other people see integrity, right? So are all three of them wrong? No, they're all three of them are right, but it happens to be that each of those individuals have integrity, beauty and openness and so on and so forth within them. So beauty is in the eye of the beholder, as they say. So same with this exercise, right? So if you see it in others or if you have an impulse, it's not to be so self-critical in terms of do I have this, do I not? It's just like boom, boom, boom. This is something I value in others, something I value within myself. And you just go through and you highlight all the words. That's the first part. Shortly thereafter, what you go do is and you collect all the like terms that mean something to you. So like wealth, prosperity, and abundance might mean something to you. Love, connection, relationships might mean something to you. But every time I do this, it's always very surprising because different people clump words together differently. And it's really profound just to witness, how we own source our own meaning. And at that point, the game already kind of starts because you're putting things meaningfully into buckets that mean something to you. Ultimately, after that step, what you do is you basically label each of those buckets that you've created, and you might end up with anything from 6 to 15 buckets. If you place an order on those buckets in terms of, I think this is what's most important to me day to day, and that shows up in the way I spend my money, in the way I decorate my house, and the way the things that are in my environment and the things that I'm looking at on YouTube and Instagram all the time, the kind of people I follow, you get a first pass of your values. Then you've got a first pass on the values that matter to you most, right? So my highest values, a connection, contribution, celebration. Yeah. Now I know that that's what I'm here to show up for. You look at me coaching, podcasting, public speaking, all of it is baked with connection, contribution, and celebration. So for me, as long as I'm connecting, contributing, and celebrating, that's my truth. Yeah. Because I love how you ask the question as well, like what is accurate, not, you know, what is true. But yeah, that's accurate for me in terms of what I should be pursuing in my life, right? And what I should be doing, because anything that drives more connection, more contribution, more celebration is amrit. I jokingly say this because I'm Indian, I can get away with this joke, but it's like values are the pillars of the temple that is you. And, you know, the joke is my body is a temple, but but yeah, with the head wobble, we were discussing this a little bit earlier, but yeah, the pillars of the temple that is you are your values. And this is your personality, right? Structured around these values, and your life energy, your soul energy sort of flows through that temple. That's the aperture within which your soul speaks through into being. And so for so many of us, that is misconstrued, like it was for me, right? Because of the upbringing in a different environment, there was this hole, and what were my values? I wasn't even aware. So the temple was kind of crumbled. The way life was expressing itself through me was kind of crumbled. And all of that to backtrack into Karen's point of like depression and values, how they linked. Well, for many people, I think, absolutely, there's an asterisk that goes in here that some people do need, like, do have a chemical imbalance and do need to go take antidepressants. Like, that is totally fair, right? To get your serotonin levels back up to speed. But being on them long term has so many dangers, whole nother chat. But for so many of us, and what I discovered from my own journey is that depression was because I was being like there was things that were within me that were being suppressed. Like authentic connection was not, when you're not honest, you can't build authentic connection. My highest values connection, so that was being suppressed, which is the same as depressed. And so I couldn't express who I truly was. And so getting clear on what my values were, and then what my, and building my entire life down the line into my values, like podcasting, coaching, speaking, connection, contribution, celebration, there's an amount of expression. So my work is actually my mental health strategy, right? Does it, like at that point, hopefully it makes a little bit more sense. Like your ability to express is your antidote to depress. To depression, yeah. Which is depressing. And then therefore your values help you be aware of what is accurate versus what is false. Anything out of alignment, touch wood, is not necessarily your highest calling.
Yeah, absolutely. Shirley says here, the three C's of Amrit's temple of values. we were talking before we came on camera about when I came back from India, I kept having the head wobble because I don't know, I must have been Indian in many past lives. I must have been Indian. It was so natural to me. And my daughter kept saying, Mom, stop doing the head wobble. But even thinking about it, like I want to do it, I just think it's so cool.
Kind of comes, it's catchy, isn't it? It's got his thing about it.
Feels good to do the head wobble. It's kind of like, yes,
for
no,
those that are
maybe,
tuning in, because I know this is radio, but right, and some of you are tuning in visually, but we are wobbling our heads as we're doing
this. We are wobbling our heads.
We're having a little wobble off.
You know, going back to what you're talking about, we are bombarded with what we're supposed to value. And when I look at the younger generation, when I look at my daughter's generation in her 30s, you might be in your 30s too, so it might be your generation too. I don't know how old you are. You look like you could be in your 30s. How old are you? How young are you?
How young? Touchwood. 35 years young.
Yeah, there you Touchwood. Go. I find that you're either completely immersed in the whole material game, like looking good, you know, being cool, fashion, looking good, earning the bucks, driving the car, or you're completely outside of that. Like I just know that my daughter's generation, there are so many more than when I was in my 30s. Kids that don't give a crap about that, and they're just following their bliss, you know, they're following their passion, they're listening to the heart, they're doing meditation, they're doing ayahuasca, they're doing the ice baths and the mushies to try and find their soul. And it's just exponentially expanded since I was in my 30s, which I find really cool. And as far as work and earning money, it's so important that they can earn money and do from their soul's calling and not from just to earn the bucks. So, yeah, it's all part of the awakening, the inspired evolution, darling, the awakening of humanity, you know, not listening to the values bombarded to us by media and magazines, but listening to the values within, like you do, like you do a process. I do it a little differently. I teach people to speak to their souls or their higher self, like, who are you? Yeah. Why are you here? What are your values? And you go, here's a process I'm going to teach you.
Have a chat. Yeah. It's interesting because, I remember remarking upon your process because it's such a direct line and connection. It was beautiful. My process, obviously, me being an engineer from background, is a process. Engineers love systems and processes.
It's a very good process. Yeah. I remember when I was young, I did Anthony Robbins and he was talking. It was the first time I started thinking about values, like, what are my values? Yeah, I'd never thought about it. Even though I had values that had been put on me, like, as a woman, you got to look good. You know, you got to be thin.
Wow.
You got to be fashionable. And none of those were my values. Mm. Like, sitting here in my tracksuit pants, my ripped tracksuit pants right now, like, they were not my values. Hello, Foxy. Like, I have to remind people that you're listening to Accentuate the Positive Media with Karen Swain. I'm speaking with Amrit Sandhu on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And we're streaming out of 107.7. I think that comes out of New Orleans, and 105.3. That comes out of Mississippi. Like, we're all over the place. It's so cool. Mm. So you started the podcast show as a search for more meaning. Like, what was the impact that you had, like, doing that? I mean, obviously, starting a show, putting your face on media, you have to get over all your insecurities and
what do I
look like, and do I sound stupid, and do I look stupid, and nervous laughs. I laughed nervously for like 10 years.
I'm still laughing nervously, probably.
People say, you laugh a lot on your show, mate. Yeah,
I do. Yeah, the blessing in for so many of it was, so much of it was, that it was called Inspired Evolution, because it gave me permission to show up messy. And I think for so many of us that have such deep-seated desires to want to, for me it was to have an impact, but it was also to, yeah, like you said before, follow your bliss, do more of what I love, and be able to. There was this harrowing thing where people, like, just the idea of exchanging the best hours of the day, where the sun's out, you can go to the beach, enjoy your life, exchanging the best hours of your day for money just so that you could sit in a cubicle, go do something, like, that was really, I don't know, it just rubbed me up the wrong way for such a long time. And it was very like, it felt like, you know, it was, yeah, I try to avoid putting it this way, but I don't know why, it felt like being in the Matrix. I don't know how much everyone here, like, loves the Matrix. I was arguably one of my favorite moments. Yeah, which is where Neo, Morpheus takes Neo into baseline reality. Like, this is in the first movie, but, like, further down the line, he goes, this is what reality actually looks like outside of the Matrix we've all been plugged into. And the year is like 3020 or something like that, or 30 or whatever. It's like 1,000 years ahead in the future or something, or 500 years. Don't quote me on that. But you have a look, and the earth is all scorched. The sky is all scorched and dark, and, like, everything just looks really industrial. There's not a lot of plant matter. And he says to Neo, he goes, when you think about it, believe it or not, actually, he says, believe it or not, it was humans that darkened the sky. And they did that thinking that if there wasn't enough solar power energy coming in, the machines wouldn't be able to operate. And little did humans know that machines, in their infinite wisdom, realized that human beings are an infinite source of energy. And then you have a look across, and there's, like, just these fields with red pods where human beings are being grown, right? And harvested for their energy. And they don't know that they're plugged in to this matrix. And so they feel like they're living out life in a simulation when really they're in this field, right? In baseline reality, touch wood. So quite dark, quite sinister. But that was the existential crisis. It was like going into work. It's like plugged into this corporate machine. Like, I was giving my absolute everything in the best years of my life, touch wood, for something that, you know, if I fell out of it, something, touch wood, God forbid, happened to me, 2 weeks later I'd be replaced and someone else would be put in that place and no one would ask too many more questions. You know, it was this really weird energy about the whole thing. Yeah. But, you know, rocking into it, I spent the first 7 years believing, you know, and that's still the mantra on the YouTube description, on the, you know, inspired to evolve to be the change I want to see in the world. You know, that Gandhi quote, be the change you want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that, you know, going in that maybe things aren't the way that I wanted them to be now, but, you know, dedicate enough time and we as the next generation will create the shift. But it wasn't really shifting. And that was creating a significant amount of existential angst. I call it the dark night of the soul. Touchwood, consistently going into work. And, you know, the message in my heart, which I share with everybody, is that your health is your purpose and your purpose is your health. And I can't tell you where that dropped in from. It's just been inscribed in my being for the longest while. And I had that even as I was going through the challenge of feeling like I described to you, like plugged into the matrix, like Touchwood. It was really this corporate cog energy. And it was really, really tough to go into work knowing that me being out of alignment wasn't the healthiest thing. In fact, it was probably the antithesis to healthy. And yet here I was doing the exact thing. So that to say, there was a lot of friction. And eventually enough became enough. Like it got to the point where it was like, there are all these people, people like Karen, authors, speakers, coaches, entrepreneurs, creatives, so many different types of people doing so many different types of things that you did, that the traditional education model and system, which is actually designed to make factory workers and then white collar workers is sort of adapted into that now, Touchwood, doesn't facilitate. And actually those are all the things that inspire me. Those are the things that feel like freedom for my expression, right? And so again, similar calamity, recognizing that I'm not able to fully authentically express myself. And that was the birthplace of the Inspired Evolution podcast. I figured, this is how an engineer thinks, if I could interview great minds, people such as Karen, like incredible people doing, like living life on their own terms every week, I could do what China does to Germany's machine, basically take them apart bit by bit by bit and then eventually put them back together and go, oh, yeah, I know how that works and I can probably build a machine or two of my own, right? Touchwood, you know, maybe they're a bit more mass-produced and a bit, you know, Chinese production's come a long way, but, you know, back in the day it wasn't the same as German engineering and it probably still isn't today. So that to say, you know, I was happy to have something that resembled the thing in my life, but that was the birthplace of the Inspired Evolution podcast, Touchwood, and asked a lot of me, to be honest, and continues to do so today in terms of coming out of my shell.
I
remember it's a, so many bits
putting on a Pocado is a personal growth course in itself, right?
It's the absolute best
absolutely
personal growth journey, I believe. I'm obviously biased, but
absolutely. And then you get to meet people from all over the world that are doing amazing things. Like your show is a little different to mine because mine's much more out there. You know, we're into the ET, multidimensional, psychic, afterlife phenomena. Mind you, you've had many NDEs on your show and you're more into maybe personal growth and, the stuff that you teach through your coaching. You talk to a lot of spiritual teachers and personal growth teachers. And meditation teachers. I saw that you had Tom Cronin on your show, who is a friend of mine. Yeah, and when my daughter was going through her dark night of the soul, I was talking about this to her last night, actually. I didn't know what to do because she didn't want to hear what mum had to say because it's like, don't tell me what to do, mum. That was her mantra. So, you know, as a spiritual teacher, I couldn't teach my own child. And I thought, I want to send her to someone, but I don't want her to rely on what they have to say. I want her to find that wisdom within. I want her to find her soul. So I sent her to Tom because he teaches meditation. Yeah. And but he has become her guru now. She says, oh, my guru, Tom. He loves him. She's just finished doing a retreat with him. He's coming back on my show because it's been almost 10 years since I've had him on the show. And he's wonderful. Meditation here in Sydney. He's got a wonderful story. So I'll have to listen to him on your show, what he's saying.
Yeah, I was just chatting him a couple of weeks ago, actually. He's he's a great, great value. Incredible gentleman.
He's beautiful, isn't he? And something that you said about The Matrix was an oh, my God moment, because I couldn't watch The Matrix because I found it too negative. I know that so many people love it. But that whole negative, like we're plugged in, we're, you know, machines, I just like, no, I don't know.
But I think the interesting thing is people loved it because it was so animated, whereas you're tuning into the actual philosophy and themes that are baked out in it, which I think a lot of people don't actually do. Yeah. Sorry.
But you said something about darkening the skies. So here at Down Under, we have like had so much rain. I was at an Ocean Lovers Festival recently, and there was a scientist talking about cooling the reefs because the reefs are bleaching, cooling the water by seeding the clouds and making it cloudy. And my ex-husband was there, and he was telling me about it and what an amazing idea it is. And, oh, my God, these scientists are amazing. And I'm thinking, this is not amazing. Like, that is no way to cool the ocean by putting cloud cover over, like making it rain. And that's what they've been doing, like cloud seeding and making it rain, like darkening the skies, blocking out the sun. And so when you were talking about that was in the Matrix, I'm like, oh, that's scary. It's sort of happening here.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, I've even like looking at, you know, experiments that they ran in South Africa around habitats and allowing, like they had fences for elephants and, you know, the habitat was not growing the way that it ought to. They took the fences down and elephants were allowed to roam and, you know, vegetation started to return to its natural state. And it made no sense because they were like, elephants trample stuff like this and that. Right. And it was like, nope, like them roaming free actually encourages things to be working. And so there is that sort of Mother Nature has her wisdom, right? And we saw that in COVID for the 3 years, you know, things shut down, especially in Melbourne, most lockdowns in the world. But you saw like, you know, in parts of Europe, like dolphins swimming up canals in the cities and stuff, like, and nature just reclaimed so much of us and it was effortless for her to do that, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I run the risk of creating a separation. I can feel it in this conversation between us and nature. We are nature, you know, that's, there is that journey of oneness, but also we seem to have as a species a sort of pinpoint, sort of like we try to pinpoint an issue and then target a response when everything is part of a greater whole, you know. And I run the risk of evangelizing, sound like a spiritual teacher, but yeah, everything is part of a greater whole, right? And so, like you said, cloud seeding sounds so, yeah, it's there's other things that I was witnessing in the US using for it escapes me right now. But this, the concept of that is like, yeah, we're going to use this now as a solution. It's like, it's a very, it doesn't sound very holistic in my humble opinion. But, you know, again, I'm not the scientist that's sort of aware of the issues and then also aware of the solutions. And, you know, maybe the Great Barrier Reef, I absolutely believe it's worth saving. It's one of the most amazing things in the world. Truly, it's one of the seven wonders of the world, seven natural wonders of the world. But then, yeah, the downwind consequences of, yeah, when we try to think we're doing, and this comes a lot up in engineering as well. You try to think you're fixing one problem, and you know, you there's like six that you create downwind, and that's where you, like I remember spending time with maturer people in my field in my back when my engineering days, a lot of them would sit and watch and wait. And it was like, no, but an issue's arise. You know, the young buck wants to get out there and like prove himself, like, I can fix this, because engineers love to fix it mentality, right? But then the old bull sort of sits there and goes, just wait a bit. Wait. Let's just, things might resolve themselves without you having to, you know, steer it too much, because if you steer it, you might kick up too much dust and it becomes less clear on how to go ahead, you know.
Well, that's so interesting that you say that, because my daughter's out on the ocean all the time. She's a reincarnated dolphin. No, really, she's out there all the time. And she's done, you know, she's done shows like on SBS and stuff, like going up and down the east coast of Australia and diving all the reefs. And I asked her about, you know, the bleaching of the reefs, because it's big in the news. And I said, did you see much of it? And she said, not really. We saw some of it, but then the next year it completely regenerated. Like, so 1 year it would be bleached and then the next year it would be regenerated. And so, yeah, nature does have its way of sorting it. Have you seen The Biggest Little Farm? Best documentary on exactly that. That is such a great documentary. Biggest Little Farm. Biggest Little Farm. So, yeah, just check that out. But I want to go back to depression, something that you said. I was thinking about my girlfriend who killed herself when she was 36 because of depression. She went through about a year of the dark night of the soul, and it ended in her killing herself. And she said something to me which was really profound. She said, if I'd had cancer, people would be more understanding, but because she was going through mental illness, she felt completely not understood. And I said to her, she married a wealthy man, she had money, everything at her fingertips, and she indulged in all of that, but she was a healer and a psychic, that she didn't follow that path. When we were young, we went to see a channeler, like we were early 20s, and this channeler said to her, oh, you can do what I do. And she's like, I'm not interested in any of that. It wasn't exciting. You know, it wasn't about fashion and parties and the A-list, you know, meeting celebrities and all that sort of thing. And she ended up killing herself. And after she died, I told her she was a healer. She said, well, now I know I'm a healer. And I think that depression is an indication that if you're depressed, you're not on your soul's path, your soul's calling. Even though you might be having fun, you know, life offers a lot of fun. And you found that with your life too, right, Amrit?
Yeah, touch wood. And so also to sort of say, if following your purpose, it is following your bliss, but there's a discrepancy already between the word bliss. Like, you go deeper, like, I guess worth highlighting at this juncture, the difference between joy and happiness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so happiness is, I don't want to say egoic, but it's mind-driven, yeah? It's in this world, like, an ice cream can make me happy. Smoking a joint could probably make some people happy, right? Different things make people happy, but long-term, does it bring me joy? Is in a very different conversation. So joy emanates from the soul, touch wood. Right. And so following your joy may not bring you happiness in the moment, which sounds very counterintuitive, right? Like waking up for podcasts at 4 a.m. to do them with people in the States. This is not, I'm not the happiest person about that. Like, I want to sleep, you know, but I am following my joy because I'm connecting with somebody. There's a contribution that's going to be made where it's going to, the conversation is going to help people celebrate life. It's going to help me celebrate. Like, this is going to be amazing. And so, like, there's this deep seated drive from the soul, which is like, this is your joy. Like, get in there, you know, which is really it. And it animates you, and you do things that you never thought before were possible, right? Like I said, waking up at 4 a.m., like traveling here, doing that, like, you know, putting on a show, like having conversations. I remember back to one of your points earlier, like I remember Wim Hof came to Melbourne, and he wasn't very well known back then. And I went along to his workshop. It was very intimate, had an incredible, like, there was like breath work. My first time, and I was like, whoa, this blew my mind. Literally, like, wide open, started seeing things. And I was like, Wim Hof, like, and afterwards, but I had the podcast at that time. And I was like, oh, I need to ask him if he'll be on a podcast or the interview. And I reckon at that time he would have said yes. And then but I didn't have the courage. I didn't have the self-esteem. My self-worth stuff was all baked in there. And I was just like, I didn't ask Wim. And then touchwood, a year later, I was like, oh no, like now I'm ready. I can ask Wim. And I asked him by that point, like Wim had just gone through his exponential growth and he's online. And it was just like, we need to be very scrupulous of where he spends his time. Unfortunately, he can't appear on your show. And I was like, dang it. Like, you know, there was this real thing, which is like me not being able to step into my power because of all the things. And that's one of the things about me being able to express my truth, my desire, and like having that conversation. And again, you know, the podcast holding space for me to grow. But back to your point, absolutely, I believe for so many of us, touchwood, given 1 in 2 around the world are now anxious or depressed. They're forecasting that for, I think, 2025, 2026. Yeah. 1 in 2 will be anxious or depressed. Like, that's a part of my friend. It's a harrowing stat. Like, I shouldn't swear, it's radio, but like, that is harrowing. Yeah. Like 1 in 2 anxious or depressed. And so a large part of that, I believe, touchwood, which is why I do the work that I do, because I believe in it this way, is I think because we are so much of what we're told who we're meant to be is suppressing our soul, our being, our soul's calling, our truest expression, our highest being, whatever you want to call that. And that's suppression, which is an easier word to come to bring to mind because it feels more like, oh yeah, I can relate to suppression.
Rather than depression.
Yeah, because depression has all this baggage. People are like, oh, I'm depressed. And it's like, well, I don't feel like I'm about to take my own life, so I must not be depressed. But do you feel the suppression? Because those are the drops of water that fill up that cup of depression, right? So each suppression, right, is suppressing, is depressing, is suppressing, is depressing. Then it gets to a point, touchwood, where you don't see yourself clearly. And back to your point about mental health, because it's happening inside, oftentimes things are happening gradually. Right. And one of my favorite visual models, if you can follow along with me, is like there's two cliffs and you can see over the ditch in between the cliffs, right? You can see over the chasm, right? But when you're in poor mental health, you're actually digging yourself deeper and deeper into the chasm. You're climbing down, you're falling into the chasm, right? For a person that's standing on top of one cliff and can see over the horizon and goes, oh, I just need to jump over the ditch or I just need to jump over the chasm, for them, speaking to the person that's down in the chasm, that's where you hear things where like, oh, just get out and get into some sunshine or what, like, you know, you're stuck in bed, come on, like, you know, it's all a mindset thing. You're not in the chasm. So saying that just digs the person that's in the chasm actually further into the chasm.
Can I tell you something?
On. Yeah,
tell that me. Was what her mother said to her, was the last thing her mother said to her before she killed herself. What have you got to worry about? You're rich, you've got a beautiful family, just get outside and get some sunshine, go mow the lawn. So she did. She mowed the lawn, man, drove up to her country house, she had this big country house, and killed herself. That was the last thing her mother said. Yeah, isn't that, yeah, just get out there and get some sunshine. Didn't help. Yep.
Yeah. And so, anyway, and that to sort of say, when you're in those different perspectives, like you, I think it's worth having that model in your mind, because it's really helpful to recognize, oh, this person, you can see right over the cliff into like the horizon and the sunset and everything's beautiful. And it's like, great. But your role and responsibility isn't to remind that person that, oh, up here there's like sunshine and stuff. And like, you're missing out down there, because they're just slipping further down the chasm the more you say that to them. It's like, hey, you're down there. How do I lend you a hand? Yeah. You know, do you need to binge on Netflix for a few days to just relax and unwind and allow your nervous system to relax? Like,
It's so
different for each individual. Like, do you need to go out to spend some time with your friends? Do you need to go spend? And so then you build yourself back up from each of those expression points. So for me, it's like, have I been connecting? Have I been contributing? Have I been celebrating? No. Okay, cool. Back to Christopher's question. Can I go connect with somebody? Can I do some volunteering? Can I do a little bit of contribution? Can I celebrate? Can I go to like a music festival or something? Or can I go to like a jazz festival or something? Can I celebrate life a little bit through the music and all the joy that comes in there? Great. Okay, now I'm digging myself out of my own chasm into that place where it's like, oh, yeah, I'm back up here. Great. Touch wood. Fantastic. Yeah. Right? And so that's the journey of like, you can't really see what's going on for the other person. And that's really harrowing to put it that way. Like, I wish, you know, someone saying that, you know, that touch wood, you know, someone saying that if they had the big C, people would see them for what's going on for them. Like, that's huge.
Yeah.
I've heard people saying before, I wish I had a physical injury, because people would then take it seriously.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But I do think times are changing. Like, I think more and more people are tuning into the mental health conversation, which I'm really grateful for. Like, even when I don't know about
America and Canada and different places in the world, but it's huge down under. I don't know even about Melbourne, but in, you know, mental health is taken very seriously. There's big, big programs and big things happening with mental health and young people and suicide in Sydney.
I do feel like there are a lot of initiatives and a lot of programs. There are still a lot of challenges. So I think we are trying to permeate the problem. I'm not sure we're quite there yet, touch wood, in my humble belief. But I do think this is all, and then this is when we zoom out and we look at it from, like, you know, again, a meta sort of perspective, but part of the whole collective breakdown to break through is part of there is a new age awakening. This is commonplace, and everybody that I've interviewed, they're like, yep, 2012 to 2032, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening, and there is this collective breakdown to break through. I'm paraphrasing it into my own words.
I love that breakdown. There's another one, Shirley, breakdown. Amrit's three breakdowns to break through. She's rewriting your website.
Touchwood.
I think finding your values is probably, if you haven't got access to your soul or your guides or a psychic, finding your values is the best way to, because you're absolutely right. One of my values, like you, is connection. And so connecting with people all across the world doing this show, it's just been an absolute joy for me.
It makes me zing.
Just people, even when I was young and out at the bars getting drunk and doing all sorts of things, I was just talking to all the strangers in the bar and connecting with people. I just couldn't help myself. I remember leaving a nightclub. It was daylight, and all the strangers, you know, drinking their troubles away at 5 o'clock in the morning in a nightclub. I introduced them all to each other, and they're all having this party, and all these strangers became friends. And I remember walking out into the light of day going, job done.
Captain Connection, salute.
So even though you've got your fears, like when you find what your core values are, so my fear was, like many people, what do you think of me, vanity, and putting your face out there and being terrified and nervous. And if your core value is more important than your fear, like you say, you do it. You do it because there's that joy that you get from the connection, which overrides your insecurities and your fears and all that sort of thing. Don't you feel? Because there's a lot of experiences out there that I have on the show. You've probably had a couple, but you seem to have more experts. And I've had people that have been terrified to share, like people for the first time talking about their ET connections or their near-death experience or their spiritual transformative, you know, experience. And they've been, they want to share it, but they're terrified, you know, of sharing it and how do they sound and how do they look and what will people think of me, you know, overcoming those fears. Like, what's more important to you? Communication might be more important than your fear about what people think about you, or maybe you're a star seed or a wanderer or a new age teacher or whatever, and uplifting humanity is more important to you than your fears of thinking about what people think of you. This is what I say to my daughter, who's now being asked to come and speak about her experiences, and she's terrified because she's shy. And I'm like, it's actually not about you. It's about who you're inspiring, who's hearing your story, and they're going, oh, my God, that was me. I, you know, I hear my story and your story and you're changing my life. Like, that's more important than what you think other people think of you. But did you read the Conversation with God books? What you think other people think of you is none of your business.
Neil, oh man, I've had him on the podcast like three times.
He's great.
He's great to chat to. And he's got his own sense of humor about things as well, which is really, really warming and lovely.
So in the next 20 minutes, I want to chat about some of the people you've had on your show because you know, I've got a show too. And I want to remind people that you're listening to the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network on 107.7 and 105.3 FM coming out of New Orleans and Mississippi. And it's Accentuate the Positive. If you're just tuning in with Karen Swain, we're talking with Amrit. I'm going to do it with the wobble of the head and
I'm going to be at the optometrist. And what's your name? Amrit.
Amrit Sandhu.
You okay, man?
Amrit Sandhu. So,
Amrit Sandhu. Sorry, I'll Amrit stop. Sandhu, we could do this all day. We could do
with
this
with the Aussie accent. Well, my friend who's out here in Melbourne at the moment, I should introduce you to him with the podcast show. He does the best Australian accent because Americans have a really hard time with Australia. Even Meryl Streep. My baby, she played, you know, that movie she played when the dingo's got my baby, and she couldn't do the Australian accent. She's the queen of accents. But Brandon does a great Aussie accent. He knows how to do it. So how many years, 7 years you've been doing the podcast show? Who's been
It's a
long time. Who's been someone that really changed the world, rocked the world, and what did they say and how did that change you?
Wow.
Good question.
That is 7 years, so many different trends. Your question is actually highlighting to me how rich the podcast is for me personally. I can't speak on behalf of the entire audience. But yeah, because every few months, like, my mind is completely different to what it was 3 months prior. So I remember one of the standout episodes. There's a few. Where do I go? Jesus. One of them was Marianne Williamson. She talked when she was running for a presidential candidacy in the United States. She was championing also her book, The Power of Love, and talking about power and love and power and corruption. And it was this really just profound conversation that really activated, I don't want to say the vigilante, it's probably not vigilante, but the activist is definitely the right word. Yeah, absolutely. The activist within me, because there was this, I think it was Mandela. I always do it. I wrongly attribute quotes left, right, and center. So pardon me for doing that. So much information inside. But the quote was nonetheless, to the effect, and again, paraphrasing, pardon me, that power without love corrupts.
Wow.
But love without power is anemic.
Love without power is anemic.
Yeah. And this was this really interesting, because up until that point, it was just like, you know, if you had to rebrand spirituality, you'd rebrand it as unity, right? In order to facilitate greater unity, we need love. And as an access point for my humble little mind is connection, you know? So that's like the Wi-Fi symbol that I visualize in my mind, like my spiritual path. But nonetheless, it's like love is, you know, but it's like, yeah, but you need to power, like, we need a power love, because power is powering itself, and it's this, you know, it's great, but you need that balance between the two. The call to arms, which was, has left with me since then, is this hashtag wage peace. You know, like, peace needs to be waged. It's something that is an active process.
Oh, yeah.
You need to show up behind love if you're going to actually, because a lot of it is like peace and love, but also peace out. You know, and then you kind of just like, oh, yeah, like, you know, there's lots of bad shit going on. There's not much I can do about it. You know, but it's like, actually, there is a lot of bad shit going on. What are you going to do about it? You know, touch wood, and not sort of bypass it in many ways, but also step up in the face of that and go, despite all that, or in spite of all that, or because of all of that, actually, I show up this way. Right. And that's this real spiritual warrior sort of path that was activated, I guess, in many ways. So that that was Marianne Williamson.
How long ago was that?
That was about
3 years ago, last elections, wasn't it?
Three. Oh, maybe 4 years. Maybe it's been that long. Feels like it was more recent. Sorry. Yeah.
I want to reiterate that. I'm just keeping an eye on the time because it's going fast. Talking to you has been a blessing. Power without, what did you say? Say it again. What did she say? Power without love is
power without love. Corrupts. Love without power is anemic.
Anemic. I didn't get that when you first said it, but then I got it. The love without power is anemic. I'm like, huh? That sort of made my mind. But then I'm like, you can love something, but if you put no power behind your love,
right. And love in the celestial realm, I think, doesn't need power. It's powered by the celestial realms, right?
Yeah.
But love in this 3D, like, it requires us to show up with attention, with care, with cultivation, with nurturing, with within us.
I'm thinking about waging peace. So 10 years ago this year, I put on a big Peace Day festival in Bondi Pavilion for International Peace Day, because I wanted people to know about International Peace Day, which is the 21st of September.
Mm.
It's like, peace should be every day, but it's also nice to stop and really be deliberate about being peaceful. And, you know, like, peace in the mainstream media, I couldn't get any mainstream media on board because peace is boring. War is interesting, but peace is boring. They didn't want to talk about it. It's different now 10 years later. But that waging peace instead of waging war, and one of the things I think, what was the guy that was shot, the black guy that was shot, Dream, You Have a Dream? Oh, I've gone blank on his
Martin
name.
Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King said, we've got to be as organized in creating peace as people are as organized in creating war. That quote, do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so you could love peace.
Yeah.
You could love peace but put no power behind that love of peace. And be warring, like hate, you know, be hate your family and not talking to this person and screwing at people at traffic, and like, you're putting no power behind your love of peace, and yet you say you love peace. So, yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, like putting that power behind what you love. So you love to be peaceful, you love to be in relationship or in
Circle it back to like channel that power back into like your values, like these connection, contribution, celebrations. So like, I need to show, pardon my French again, the I need to show up behind those. Mm-hmm. To like, otherwise, I like to connect, I like to contribute, I like to say, but I'm not going to do much about it. That's the waging, right? That's like, okay, I'm going to go on that radio show where I'm talking to thousands and thousands of people, and this is going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, how important, touch wood, you know, I'm going to have the opportunity to connect, but I'm also hoping that the contribution is important and impactful. Hopefully people celebrate their life a little bit fuller, right? So that's that, and you get out of your own way, similar to what we were discussing before.
Yeah.
So that was one of them. Another one recently was, we had this conversation about this lady's near-death experience. She had a really interesting experience because she overdosed. Her doctor had, anyway, she overdosed. It was a really interesting story. And she passed away. In 3D time, she passed away for 10 years. For her, she passed away for eternity, right? So she was off and she experienced everything, I was going to say under the sun, beyond the sun as well. So I don't know how to, anyway. And she came back with a few really interesting things because she didn't have, because it was an overdose, she didn't have the tunneling and the light, and she didn't have people coming to get her to guide her on her journey next, which is a common theme that is present in near-death experiences through some of the conversations we've had on the podcast. She just landed on the other side and she was having all these experiences. And one of the things she came back with, which I thought was quite profound, is that, and this couples with another set of podcast series that we've been doing with a gentleman named Hans Wilhelm. He's got a beautiful channel called Life Explained on YouTube. And him and I have been doing podcasts like every about 4 or 6 months because he's just such a rich well of spiritual insight. The conversation being that what you place your faith in slash believe in this lifetime, it's not like, oh yeah, that'll send you to heaven or that'll send you to, like, it's not like that, really. Touch wood, maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't want to, you know, poo-poo the belief of those people that believe in that part of me. I'm not trying to be sacrilegious. But what I've learned from the podcast, I should say, is that the theme seems to be that once you go through your journey of life, depending on how you navigate it, impacts where you land on the other side.
Absolutely.
Right. So it's like it dictates where you matriculate to. And it's not that, you know, matriculating to a certain school is not as good as it's all just experience. Right. And so this was really profound because she was like, you will land wherever your consciousness is at through your lifetime. Now you can do the work. And this is, you know, religion's been saying this is like, be a good person. Mm-hmm. Spirituality just basically says raise your consciousness, you know, and it's the same thing dressed up in a whole new package, but it's the same thing, right? Like do the work, raise your consciousness so that when you do land on the other side, you're closer to where you want to be, right? And so that was this really interesting insight and download that, yeah, I'm not explaining it fully. I can, because way she was described is like the afterlife is also your afterlife.
Yeah, it's your creation.
It's exactly what, it's exactly your what creation. You would want your afterlife to be.
We spoke about that in length with Preston Dennett the week before last on the show. So Preston Dennett is a UFO researcher and he's got 32 books out there on the phenomena. He's interviewed people from all around the world about their experiences, but he's also a really experienced astral traveler. Like he deliberately spent a lot of time doing it and he does it every night and we all do it every night. So we spoke about the different realms that he went to in the afterlife and the hell realms and why people are there. It's all about resonance, vibrational attraction. It's resonance. It's where you're attracted to. It's where your consciousness is at the time. And remember I was telling you about Michael Tamora, who was on Alex's show. He's left his body, but he was an amazing spiritual teacher who's since left 6 months ago.
I've had some really interesting experiences since you talked about that, actually. But yeah, Dutch.
Really? Because we were chatting the other day and Michael popped in and he was saying to Alex, because, you know, Alex Ferrari show, he was saying, you're just getting started. And Michael had said to me years ago that he'd been doing this for years and he hadn't got the traction in his teachings that he thought he was going to get. And the last show he did got like hundreds of thousands of views and then he pops off, he leaves the planet. But and he said that he wanted to help you because, yeah, he just from spirit, he's helping expand consciousness. Anyway, I'm getting off track. But he used to talk about how important it is to do the work physically because it will impact where you go the next, because there's life after life after life after life and it's all about vibrational resonance. So if you're stuck in anger and resentment, you're going to carry that into your next experience. Yeah, it's a big conversation. It's a really interesting conversation. I'll have to listen to that podcast show. What was her name on your show?
That was Alyssa Rushton, A-L-Y-S-A, Rushton, R-U-S-H-T-O-N. And then the other gentleman was Hans Wilhelm, H-A-N-S Wilhelm, W-I-H, W-I-L-H-E-L-M. Yeah, if you check them out, the Inspired Evolution podcast, they'll be in there. And the you'll find them under the – there's categories on the playlist on the channel. So, yeah, if you look at death, dying, and wisdom from the other side.
How did that impact your life? Like, you know, the man –
Hey, you don't ask that question.
And so we've got 10 minutes to go. So, but like, because you hear these things, and there are a lot of people out there listening to radio shows like ours and, you know, on the United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal, and there's a lot of information circulating. But how do you integrate it into your life when you hear something that hits you in the heart and is like really profound and you go, oh, that's a real aha moment? How do you integrate that into your life and make that a part of your operating system?
Yeah, for me, it's a drawn out process of really sitting with it. So the process of meditation, mindfulness is like it's a big part of my operating, the way I operate, touch wood, and I'm conscious it's not for everybody. But also one of the things I'm certified as is a Gene Keys coaching guide. And so in there, the art of contemplation. So once something's been brought to your awareness or my awareness, generally what happens for me is I will sit there with it and allow the idea to gestate and ruminate at length. One of my favorite sort of – my grandfather was really well read, and I picked up one of his journals, and he had newspaper snippings in his journal pasted in, like glued in. I was like, why would you paste in other people's stuff on your journal? And then he was journaling and writing about how that piece of information found him at that particular point in time. And I always reflect on that, because with today we're awash with information, like digital information, even this is part of it, right? There's so much noise, but how do you find the signal? Whereas back then there wasn't as much noise. So like he was living in this time where, you know, the fact that he was cluey enough to be like, oh, this is a synchronicity that I was exposed to this piece of information and this is where I'm at in my life right now and this is really profound. And then he would sit to contemplate and he would cut it out of a magazine or article and paste it in his journal and start to write about it, right? And so for me, that is the process, that the start of the process. But I don't actively cut something out and stick it in my journal. But in my mind, I do the same thing. It's like, oh, that just happened. Let's contemplate that for the next little while. And that could be anywhere from like a week to like 6 months, depending on what's been installed. And that's the shift in awareness that's happening.
Mm.
It's really important to recognize the shift in awareness, because once the shift in awareness happens, the rest sort of trickles downstream from there. And I'm conscious of how much time we have, so I'll be quick about it. But when I share this from stage as a really quick example, it's like I used to be a litter bug. I'm not proud of it. This was like ages ago. It was a whole nother life. But nonetheless, I used to just throw my litter on the earth. The engineer in me used to think that there was clean, like street sweepers and cleaners, and like everything was filtered before it went out into the ocean. Not the case, right? Anyway, I was like littering. My wife for years was like, Amrit, don't litter. And I was like, just whatever, like, you know, I'm cool. Such a fool. Anyway, so one day she goes, you know that goes, she said something slightly different. She goes, you know that goes to the ocean. And I was like, no, it doesn't. She goes, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that video of the turtle with the straw coming out of its nose, and the straw is longer than the blessed turtle. And I'm like, oh my God. In that moment, I had that visual representation of like, oh, that's me. I put that straw in the turtle's nose. Like, oh, like I was just so disgusted with myself as of that point. Now, trying to keep it brief. As of that point, I wish I'd told you, I could tell you, sit here from my center of truth, that I never littered again. And that's not true, right?
Wow.
The next time I had rubbish in my hand, I threw it on the earth, didn't even think about it. Second time, had rubbish in my hand, threw it on the earth, didn't even think about it. It was probably the third or fourth time that I threw the rubbish on the ground and the turtle came to mind, and I just kept throwing the rubbish on the ground and kept walking. It was probably times 5 and 6 that the visual of the turtle was in my mind as I was throwing the rubbish on the ground, and I was starting to feel really bad about it. And it was times 7 and 8 that like I was feeling bad, dropped the rubbish on the ground, walked a little bit, and then was like, oh, that wasn't right. went back to pick up the rubbish and then started looking for a bin. And it was times 9 and 10 where I felt bad, had the rubbish in my hand, went to throw it on the earth and go, you're going to look like an idiot throwing it on the earth, walking 10 meters, coming back to pick it back up and then looking for a bin. Just look for a bin, bro. Okay, cool. And then I went and found a bin. And so it took me about 10 shots to integrate it. The question I ask people when I share this from stage is like, at what point did you shift? And most people are like, oh, you're finally putting the rubbish in the bin. That makes sense.
But that's not the shift.
The shift is the awareness when I saw the turtle in my head.
Yeah, thanks for being so vulnerable and honest about that. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, you know what. The rest is
integration. The rest is you integrating the shift. And we've got to hold space for ourselves and each other as we integrate. Right? Absolutely. It takes time.
I was telling a client yesterday that I was having this conversation with myself and my mob. I call my guides very irreverently the mob. about overcoming my reaction to people, like getting angry or pissed off or upset. Like if somebody, remember I said integrity is a big value. So if I feel like someone's lying to you when you're a psychic, you know when people are lying to you, and getting angry about that and sort of reacting in anger. And I remember thinking about something that had happened too many years ago to remember what the conversation was, but it hit my anger and I reacted badly. I'm having the conversation in my mind with the mob thinking, I can do better. Because every time I'd hit that sort of situation where I knew people were trying to rip me off or lie to me, I'd get angry and like, I can do better. And I kept failing and getting angry and getting angry. And then I remember saying to the universe, the guides, the life, bring it on. Bring me somebody else to make me angry so that next time I react with love and understanding and patience. And then I remember I was driving and I was turning a corner in Bondi. I just had so clear in my mind and I just had this real, did I just ask the universe to send me more crap to put up? Like, did I just do that? Did I just ask the universe or life to send me more, you know, crap to put up with so that I can sharpen my tools in, you know, being calm and understanding. And we get lots of opportunities to integrate what we know to be our truth. And lots of opportunities. Thank you for sharing that.
Time's truly dilated in today's interview.
Like, I know we've got 4 minutes left.
Like, it's been really interesting watching it. Yeah. Anyway, please continue.
We've gone to places. We've gone to so many places and I didn't know we'd go. That's what I love about these free-flowing conversations. You know, we're going to talk about you and your story and consciousness and spirituality and all sorts of things, but you never really know where the conversation is going to take us. I find that really exciting. Is that how you find it on your podcast show?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Get prepared for one particular conversation. Three minutes to go, darling.
What would you like to say to people that they can take away and integrate into their life?
Yeah, really, it's that message that I shared with you guys earlier. Your health is your purpose and your purpose is your health. And for many people, they don't really care about purpose or purpose is way out of sight and it's just not something you care about, but you can feel yourself and health is where the suppression, sorry, sounds like something you take, suppression shows up in your system, right? So when you can identify the suppression, you can generally identify it in your health. And if you take a deeper look, you may find that actually what you're suppressing is a deep-seated sense of like, oh, what I was put here to do, to feel, to experience my joy, my bliss. You're not able to express that fully and to have a look at that. So health is purpose. Purpose is health, is the moniker, is sort of the everything that's underlying everything that I champion in the world. I highly recommend people go get clear on their values. Again, like I know I'm not here to promote stuff, but you know, 20 minutes masterclass, you could know your values as clearly as I know mine's. Amrit.coach/values. It's completely free. I just feel like this work's so important for people. Touch wood that, you could be that clear.
Beautiful. Yeah, values is a big one. Find your values, like what you really value, and it guides you through your life. Absolutely. Or talk to your spirit guides. Talk to your soul. I was at a friend's place who was saying, I've been trying to talk to my spirit guides. I've been trying. And he kept saying it all night. And I'm like, you can do it. And not one moment during the whole thing did I think to tell him, well, come and have a session. I'll introduce you to your spirit guides. I'm like, I had this opportunity to promote myself and I didn't, which I do pretty much on every show. I never promote myself because I get so into the conversations. But there's so many amazing healers out there, and I think you're speaking to your generation and I'm speaking to mine. So the people that resonate with you and your story will go to you, and the people that resonate with me and my story will go to me. And thank you so much for coming on the show, Amrit. I'm going to check out, you know, more of your podcast shows.
Karen, thanks. Dude, a blessing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's an incredible gift and pleasure and treat to be here, actually. Like, yeah, really honored, really honored. Thank you so much for having me. And namaste and g'day.
Namaste, g'day.
That's going to stay with me for sure, with a slight head wobble sprinkled in as well.
You've been listening to Accentuate the Positive on the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We've run out of time. Bye.
Bye.